Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. 6 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. Day after the big first historic moment in Alabama. Kind of think about all the firsts that Alabama has, building a rocket that went to the moon, a 911 call in Haleyville. The first Mardi Gras, as y'all like to remind everybody every 10 minutes in Mobile, not New Orleans. And we achieved a historic first last night with nitrogen hypoxia as a means of execution. And I tell you what, the media aren't taking this well in this state. Are they? Those of you that keep up with the local statewide media, they're having a real difficult time this morning. I'm sorry this happened to them, that the state of Alabama put to death a guy who killed a woman with a fireplace poker. Yeah, I mean, where is our compassion? How dare us use a means of execution that's never been tested before, never been used before, breaking new ground to carry out justice in the name of justice? How dare you besmirch the name of justice? No, it was really remarkable. Look, I could go either way on this. I don't. But what's like really made me like pro nitrogen hypoxia is just the emotional investment of our mainstream media in Alabama. It's disgusting. Like, get over yourselves. That, I mean, that was a big goofy night last night. But on the other hand, No one died except for the executed, as we were told might happen by all the Soros-funded storefronts in this state. And there's a lot of Soros money floating around Montgomery. I mean, why you would want to put a left-wing nonprofit in Montgomery, Alabama, I don't know. So, Something we could I would petition Governor Ivey and ALDOT Director John Cooper. When you hit that state line, when you get to the Perdido River there for coming in from Florida, or on the other side of the Escatawba, coming from Pascagoula, we could have like Sweet Home Alabama. Governor Kay Ivey, and then under that, where there used to be the World Games 2022 or whatever it was, you could take that off, and you could put first in nitrogen hypoxia executions. Like, you know, like North Carolina on their license plate is first in flight. So you'd say, oh, we need first in Mardi Gras, so we go drive around New Orleans. But this is a remarkable achievement. It's a game changer. And who says Alabama can't break new ground on certain things? Anyway, enough of that joking around. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. You text me. Also on the program today, coming up in about 30 minutes, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. Inside Alabama Politics, Capital Journal. We haven't heard from him in a little bit. We will hear from him today. Also from Alabama Today, fan favorite, April Marie Fogel. Maybe she and I can argue about school choice or something.
As if code shouldn't determine the outcome of your child's education.
Oh, okay. And finally, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. As I said, text line 251-343-0106. Text me. Let me know. How did you celebrate and or mourn last night's execution of Kenneth Eugene Smith, who our state trained liberal arts degree media wants to turn into George Floyd or something? Or did you are you even aware that we carried out an execution last night? All right, we'll get started here. Texas is just like, they're just flipping the Biden administration to Byrd. So, in case you haven't been keeping up with it, the Biden administration achieved a significant Supreme Court victory when the justices ruled that the Supreme Court could indeed, the Border Patrol under the direction of the Biden administration, so the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, could go and cut this barbed wire fence that the state of Texas put up to stem the flow of illegal immigrants. And they put it up, and the Border Patrol gave it a green light to cut it down. And so the court rules, and here comes the Border Patrol with their wire cutters, and they start cutting the wire, and the left in America is very excited. We show those dumb Texans who's boss. Well, Governor Abbott just comes back behind them and puts up another fence. So the interpretation from the left is, oh my God, can you believe they're defying a Supreme Court order? And the reaction to right is, wait, all they said is you could cut down the fence. They didn't say you could put up a new fence. So here we are. We're at a stalemate in Eagle Pass, Texas. Does anybody wonder, like, we only talk about, like, January 6th and Fed plants and Ray Epps and, Does anybody kind of think this? That the federal government's trying to, like, stir the pot in Texas? Like, Gretchen Whitmer style? Trying to start some kind of civil war or something? Not trying to start it, because the federal government will finish a civil war, and they will win. I know some of you are like, it's time to go. No, you're not going to beat them. But they're trying to stir up, it feels like, because they do this at times, just to capitalize on dissent, on dissension, on a rogue state getting out of the line even. I don't know, I'm usually not like a big conspiracy guy, but I would keep my eyes peeled for efforts to entrap anyone who thinks that they're going to go down there and be a part of the first Fort Sumter in this new era we live in. So that's one thing. It's just weird how that's being played up. Even the national media right now are talking about nitrogen hypoxia. I can't believe that this is as big of a deal as it is. And finally, we're still kind of, I think Congressman Carl's really avoided the worst here of what I thought could be a day or two storm from Thursday night or Wednesday night's debate. Talking about everybody being racist, it looks to me like that is coming gone. If you don't know what I'm talking about, there was a congressional district one debate, Daphne on Wednesday night. And a couple of things had happened. Peter Albrecht, my co-moderator, hey, is what's your reaction to Nikki Haley saying the U.S. isn't a racist country? And Jerry Carl said everybody's racist to some degree. It is one of his exact words. And what he had intended to say was everybody is prejudiced. And such as it was, it kind of blew up. It got picked up by NBC News, the Hill newspaper. Not very many other places, but enough to be like, oh, okay. And then it sort of fizzled out. So what I was thinking, well, it's probably not going to change anybody's mind when it comes to who they're going to vote for. They already knew who they were going to vote for. But it was, I thought, well, it could be an obstacle, a fire to put out for the Carl campaign. Now, late yesterday, I'm going to read you, it's kind of lengthy here. Jerry Carl, his reaction to his statement, this is from his campaign. Quote, last night during a debate, I was asked if I think America is a racist country. What I said is there's been racism in America, and we need to do everything we can to eradicate biases and racism and stand united regardless of skin color. He continues, the far left wants to divide us on race with Antifa and Black Lives Matter, and Barrymore does it by voting to keep CRT in our military. This district was drawn along racial lines, and I disagree with it because we need to look at people for who they are, regardless of their skin color. Barrymore compared opposing races to ants who have been thrown together. Don't we stand united as Americans to do what's best for our country, regardless of race? I always say this, Jerry Carl, I love you to death, but like, was it necessary to get a dig in at Barrymore when backtracking on your gaffe? Do we think that, how many of you out there, and if you're driving, don't raise your hand, but if you're just kind of there at the radio, maybe you're at a stoplight, or you're listening at home, or whatever it may be, how many of you think that Barrymore, the incumbent congressman from the 2nd Congressional District, really believes in CRT? Yeah, I don't see many hands going up. I'm kind of looking around here. Of course, I'm in a room by myself. So I just look on your statement, apologize. We know what you meant. Save your attacks for tomorrow on your opponent, but don't try to like conflate something or make up something that isn't there. You know, I Barrymore voted against the NDAA. He had his reasons. They're clearly out there. We understand that. We can disagree with them. We can say the good outweighs the bad here. I think it's a judgment call. But trying to make it all about that, well, they will do the same to you with Ukraine funding and whatever. Abortion in the military that is apparently not there. Also, more on that in a moment. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. The finest pickup to ever play the
blues. I saw the light. I saw the light. No more darkness. No more night. Now I'm so happy. No sorrow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5, 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You know what's on your mind coming up into that next segment? We'll talk to Todd Stacey of Alabama Daily News and the host of Alabama Public Television's Capital Journal. That's in just a few minutes here. Let's see. We got a lot of text to get to here. Maximus. Roll, Poxia, roll, he begins. Instead of crying for the murderer, how about you cry for the victim? It's just weird that, like, I don't know that these people really care that much about the murderer, the convict. They just care about the cause. They're so emotionally wrapped up in these causes, guys. It's very off-putting to have to watch it because you know they're like fading outrage, but I mean, some of them probably are true believers. I'll tell you a little secret. What's really going on here? It's the cool thing to be anti-death penalty if you're in those circles. And it's just they're like playing it out here. On a texter, I think he should have been executed the same way he murdered his victim. No, I don't think so. It's just we still need to live by some standards. We may not have the system perfected, but we try to do our best. Unnamed texture, to be fair, the article about Jerry's comments that hit Fox News until 8:45 last night. Yeah, but there were all day articles in different other places, unnamed texture. It really did. Jason, you see Albrecht's on the news last night taking pride in the race question, getting national attention. He should have never been there, and that was his intention. No, I mean, I don't think he intended to get national attention. I sat with a meeting. We had two meetings. He brought it up, and like, look, I mean, I don't think it's a secret here. I was supposed to be kind of the right winger, and he was going to be, I guess, the voice of moderation and a Republican primary in this part of the state. It was necessary to have that. And maybe he took it in a different direction, but that was sort of the intent. I don't think he was like, hey, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to get on the national news. Tim, Jeff, in regards to what Jerry Carl said, he misspoke. That's what happens when you don't have any credentials. Well, now Jerry Carl's got credentials. Jerry Carl has won two significant elections in his life. County commissioner his first time around and Congress the first time around. This is the third major election in his life or his political career. I mean, others have been formalities. He's faced token opposition. He's got some big, big players on his side, guys. Don't underestimate these folks. Unnamed texter, Jeff, don't criticize Jerry for being Jerry. He has showed you who he is. You guys that are Jerry haters, I don't understand it. You want a fighter? Just like, there's merit in both sides here, but Jerry Carl took the fight to Anthony Fauci. I'll never forget that. Suggesting that there's something not quite right here. Now, maybe he jumped the gun on like what the reason was, or maybe he didn't. But at least he was willing to say, hey, you know, there's really something strange here about a guy who's very, very adamant about you getting a vaccine and wearing a mask. What is going on here? I mean, we get briefed on this stuff, and we don't know that this is necessarily as effective as people say it is. What exactly is going on here? And not very many others, including our governor, were willing to say that. 251-343-0106. Text me. More text on the way. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Every gambler knows that the secret It's midnight in Montgomery. Just hear that whippoorwill. See the stars light up the purple sky.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show. Lift and Talk 106.5.
Thank you so much for listening on this Friday. It's finally Friday morning. You want to text me, hit me up there, 251-343-0106. I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. April Refogle coming up in about an hour, in about 2 hours. The show's returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. That's coming up on this morning's show. Joining us now, however, we do this on Fridays. Always a pleasure to bring on my next guest. He is the host of Alabama Public Television's Capital Journal and publisher of Alabama Daily News, and for you real insider-y types, inside Alabama politics, I recommend everybody check that out if they get the opportunity. But Todd Stacey joins us on the line. Todd, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for coming on, as always. Hey, a random question for you, and you're an Auburn guy, but I know you spent some time in Tuscaloosa, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was up there the other day.
Taco Casa, overrated, or are you a believer?
You know, I have never been to Taco Casa. And so everybody that I know is a Tuscaloosa person raves about it. And I do love tacos. So I'm sure I would love it, but I cannot say I've ever been.
All right. Well, you get back to us on that one, because I think it's just I think it's so overrated. It's an Alabama thing, and it is it's okay or whatever. But anyway, enough of that. Let's kick off here. Are you surprised where we are? The buzz heading into the legislative session, it's being overshadowed, it seems like, by a lot of other different things and the stuff that's going on in the state and probably bigger nationally, both at the election cycle coming up. Typically, Todd, in election years, I know they try to get in and get out, but this isn't necessarily a cycle that really impacts a lot of members. I mean, does the backdrop of election politics really matter in a legislative session?
I don't think so. I mean, the way it's going to matter is really going to be early in the session, and that's just because several lawmakers are running for Congress in the second district, right? You've got all Britain on the Republican side. You've got like six or seven on the Democratic side. So, and Senator Albritton is the general fund budget chairman in the Senate, you know, so he's supposed to write a general fund budget while he's campaigning for Congress. So that's going to be tough on him personally. And it's going to be tough on people like Anthony Daniels, Napoleon Bracey, you know, and all of those who are current lawmakers running for Congress. But that's about it. I don't expect, you know, like the Supreme Court race or the school board race to really impact the legislative session. So after March 5th, it becomes a lot less of a burden. But if all Britain is in the runoff, obviously that time gets extended. They kind of fixed the schedule situation last year. It used to be this session would be starting in March and getting out in mid to late June. They fixed that by altering the way the sessions are called each year. So we're starting first week of February. That's a lot easier to manage in terms of the length of the session. You know, as my colleague Mary Still says, the legislative session is not a summer sport. It is not meant to be done in the summer. And so I think everybody's grateful for that schedule change so that, you know, they're really out mid to late, I guess like that third week of May.
Todd, now the last, this first year of the quadrennium was, I was surprised early on. Everything was really, really efficient. You had these just vote totals that were near unanimous in the House. the Senate was still kind of doing its Senate thing with a couple of the Democrats coming up to works where necessary. But, like, do you sense that something's going to be a little different this year, or should we kind of look at that as a kind of the maybe the template for the next few years?
Well, I mean, it's always going to be a mixed bag. There are going to be issues, you know, like last year you had the overtime, you know, ending state income tax on overtime. I mean, who doesn't want that? That's a pretty easy bill, and other bills that were just no-brainers. Sometimes you're going to have that. And the budgets, because they spend so much time working on the budgets, those are always pretty unanimous as well. But, you know, this year you're going to have some divisive issues, right? We're looking at they're going to bring back the ballot harvesting bill. That could get the most uproar from Democrats, just because anytime you talk about voting, it really gets contentious. So that'll probably be one of the first bills debated in the Senate. So, yeah, plenty of a rancor over that early in the session. Also, things like CRT, you know, the divisive concepts bill that has been around a little while too. Going to see that again. I fully expect, whether it's in that legislation or maybe a standalone legislation, I think they're going to get into this DEI issue, which may or may not generate a lot of opposition from Democrats, only because I think after this Harvard situation, after the Claudine Gay situation and that debacle at that congressional hearing, that's a layup for Republicans. The policy matters in terms of what they're actually, you know, trying to require of colleges or whatever. But that issue, it's really hard to argue against after, you know, Harvard kept stepping on a rake.
Well, I guess the big one would be gambling. And it's kind of weird because it sounds like, I mean, the bill's going to be probably really in some ways similar to what we saw a few years ago with the Senate bill. But I think the added component of some kind of law enforcement mechanism to deal with all this rogue illegal gambling around the state, it doesn't sound like it's got a lot of it's got some tepid support right now in the House, but there's a lot of senators that are either hard-nosed or kind of soft-nosed for whatever reason. And you got to wonder, Todd, will members of the House vote for something if they think it's going to go die in the Senate?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of Republicans that would House Republicans that would be at risk for getting defeated in the election, next election, if they voted for a gambling bill. It's the issue has evolved to the point where I just don't think that's politically risky. So it wouldn't be for that reason. I think plenty of them have ideological opposition to expanding gambling, and that's always going to be. I don't see it as a real political risk for anybody. So, yeah, we just have to wait and see. I mean, a lot of this is just being discussed internally. We really pride ourselves on having some good sources and being able to flesh out what's going on. But on this issue, they really are keeping it close to the vest. I agree with you. It's going to look a lot like what happened, what was proposed in 2021. But all the details will change, right? It's still going to be casinos, lottery, sports betting. We know that's what they're after. But I agree with you that, you know, the ones leading this effort really want to make sure that there are mechanisms in place to crack down on illegal activity and to truly regulate the industry. And look, that really is important. I mean, if you just open the floodgates to gambling, it could lead to lots of bad outcomes. And so I take them at their word that they really do want to make sure that there's tough, strict enforcement, not just of whatever legal entities end up coming, but especially for the fly-by-night operations that the Attorney General and others have just had a hard time keeping up with. They're playing whack-a-mole.
Well, how much wiggle room do you think there will be there? Because I think we've done a little report on this as well, and I think we got a good idea, a good sense of what the architects, Andy Witt and Blackshear, are trying to promote. But how willing are they going to be to back off some of this or change anything and try to find that magic three-fifths supermajority they need to get a CA? Do you think there will be that negotiating space, or maybe there's just not enough there? I don't know. I can't really get a sense of how wedded they are to what they want to do.
I think they would like very much to present a bill, you know, in the early part of the session that has the votes to move and not have to be opening it up and negotiating, because that's really where things can go off the rails. Because there can be sort of honest to God, good faith negotiations. People want different provisions and want to tweak the bill. There's also bad faith negotiations where opponents know, well, I'm going to demand this, but I never intend to vote yes, just to kind of gum up the works, as you put it, and slow the process down. So I know they'd rather move fairly quickly, but you got to have the votes. And the question is going to be, how many Republicans are, you know, philosophically opposed to gambling and therefore just not going to support the bill? And will that be enough Republicans to cause them to need Democrats to pass it? Now, look, Democrats are traditionally for bills like this, right? And just all things being equal, they would be absolutely for all this, especially given the various pots of money. But what they are going to want, and what they, same thing they wanted last time around, is to explicitly have the biggest guarantee they can get that the money will be used to expand healthcare options, essentially expand Medicaid or some form of that. That's really where it broke down last year or last time. They were demanding pretty explicit language in the bill that Republicans were not willing to go along with. So if they need Democratic votes to pass it, then that could lead to some interesting negotiations. But again, I think they really want to move it quickly.
Joined by Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, here on the program. Todd, another question I have, and I mean, I am in this right-wing kind of noise echo chamber machine here, and I mean, I I'm not a school choice guy, but I hear it nonstop daily. How serious is the school choice push? Because I know the governor said what she said on your show right after session last year. But I mean, I already see the different sides kind of gearing up for war here. And whenever that happens, I mean, I'm just very skeptical that you'll get a real victor on either side on this one.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, what everybody's waiting on is to see what the governor and, you know, she's working with really the budget chairman in the legislature, what their final proposal is. I don't think it's going to be the Price Act that was, you know, essentially universal school choice, education savings accounts, better known as vouchers sometimes. It's pretty clear that they don't want to go that far. So you're thinking about things like, will there be a cap, right? Like basically a limit on how much state tax dollars can be spent on this program. We've heard that, you know, maybe it's $100 million, maybe it's $200 million. Well, that really does limit the scope of it. Will there be an income threshold, right? Is it anybody can take the $7,000 from the state and go across the street? Or will there be, you know, income thresholds like there are for a lot of other programs? And will there be accountability provisions? A lot of people are concerned about that, you know, okay, if I take my $7,000 and I go use it for homeschool or a private school or whatever, is there any kind of standard to what kind of school you're allowed to use that money for? Because you can see some like fly-by-night operations and some abuse possibly taking place. So those are really the questions. And at the end of the day, yes, it's a big issue. Yes, it's important. And this voucher ESA thing is kind of the new fad in school choice. But if you look at the numbers from other states, you're not talking about a sea change in terms of just this exodus of students from public school going to private school options. It's just not this massively used option. And so people really should temper their expectations in terms of what this is going to mean if it does pass. Because I don't think it's not like a million school kids are going to go
right
to change school, or even hundreds of thousands. It will be limited.
Well, that is, and like, you know, the anticipation is that it's going to be a big fix too. I don't know, like maybe it is a big fix in some places, but what occurs to me is it's Alabama's very, very, I don't know if underwhelming is the word. I guess it is in its education results. So are we setting ourselves up here? What do we expect the outcome to be from all of this? And I think that, you know, as you would temper the expectations with the participation in it, but probably need to temper the expectations with whatever improvements we expect to see. I mean, I don't know what we're going to get out of it.
Well, that's exactly right. And remember, let's just say, so whatever students leave and go to a private school or homeschool or what have you, well, that stops being counted in terms of the NAEP scores and the NAEP testing, the nation's report card. So those students are no longer a part of that testing survey group. And so really it could harm at least our NAEP scores, our scores compared nationally. I don't want people to have this idea that, you know, it's going to fix everything. And you're getting onto an important point, and that is in the legislature, traditionally on the education issue, it's always been about how are we going to improve things, improve outcomes, improve student achievement, improve instruction, improve teachers and all this stuff. A lot of this school choice argument really has nothing to do with improvement, but more about freedom.
Right.
Hey, I've got the right to use my tax money the way I want to.
Like an ideal, and not, yeah.
Right. And those two ideas can be in conflict sometimes.
So I got to leave it there. Folks want to know what you got coming up on Capital Journal and are sign up for your newsletter at Alabama Daily News. Tell them how to do so.
Absolutely. Capital Journal tonight at 7:30 on Alabama Public Television. We're going to be talking about this mental health poll and some pushes going on mental health, and obviously the death penalty situation, including an upcoming execution, another one. So you can watch that. And yes, sign up for the newsletter, aldailynews.com. You're going to want it, especially with the session less than 2 weeks away.
Todd, as always, we appreciate your time.
All right, Jeff, be good.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Can this really be the end? To be stuck inside a mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
Mona. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday. Friday is finally Friday morning. Coming up in the next hour, April Marie Fogle. We'll hear from her. That's coming up here shortly. We got a few texts to get to here. By the way, 251-343-0106 to be in touch with the program. Michael, I feel like Jerry has been told he's losing and now he's flailing like a four-year-old, throwing a tantrum because Barry is taking his toy district, and I used to like Jerry. Well, I don't know. The polls show him down, but within the margin of error. Is he in trouble? Is Jerry Carl in trouble here? And that's why he's like really swinging wildly at Barry Moore. Maybe they have some internal polling that tells them different from what we're hearing. I don't know. At times when you go that negative, and he says it's not going negative, but I would beg to differ. Those are the markings of a campaign struggling to get traction. But we'll see. Jason, is it Jerry throwing his mama under the bus as a racist? The real story. No. And we know what he meant. He meant prejudice. We don't know, but I know. We'll see. Well, yeah, we got two or three more texts to get to. We'll get to those after this brief timeout. Let's get a break in here. By the way, 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FN Talk 106.5.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poore Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday. It's finally Friday. Text line 251-343-0106. Be in touch with the program. Let us know what is on your mind. Still to come, April Marie Fogle. That's in about a half hour from now. And our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott from Josephine, my state senator, will be with us. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. I see Steve Marshall right now giving a press conference, and surprisingly, of all places, MSNBC carrying it live. MSNBC, the place for your death penalty, criminal justice, up-to-date news. So, General Marshall there, I'm going to try to get him on here in the next few days. There's a lot going on in his office. He's a very busy guy. And I'm eager to hear what he's got to say on this. You know the media, they are just mad. Once again, Alabama making you know, our state leaders making us look redneck to dumb and not really as cool as they are in New York. They're having a real hard day today. If you didn't hear, Kenneth Eugene Smith put to death last night, and if you don't keep up with all of you don't really watch your fourth estate as closely as I do. As being a member of the fourth estate, I might add. But all of us as members of the media, we all are required to have a Twitter account. It's not in writing anywhere. It's just understood that if you want to survive and thrive in this space, you have to like say snarky and clever things on social media, and it doesn't really work on a Facebook, but it works on Twitter, or as we call it now, X. Oh, now CNN is carrying the Marshall press conference. But just based on watching that last evening, there's some really, 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 really devastated members of our media in this state over the death of Kenneth Eugene Smith. They are not taking this well at all. So, well, more on that, but I'm just emotionally invested in this stuff. You got to be on guard for that. Real quick, couple of texts to get to here as promised. Fire Dog, who I got to meet in person on Wednesday night, as well as my wife and child. Let's see here. You both did great with the questions. There weren't any when you did stop killing baby type questions. Most, other than my aforementioned dislike of Matt Gaetz's question, after you explained yesterday why that question was asked, it made it a bit more sense. Yeah, and because Matt Gaetz matters to the 1st Congressional District. You got to have a working relationship with the district, with the members of the districts that border your district. Like I said, disaster relief is a big one. infrastructure. But Matt Gaetz is a national figure. Now, Jeff Miller held that seat, not so much. But Jeff Miller, from what I could tell, had a good working relationship with Joe Bonner. And I guess said, those of you who were listening yesterday, why the 1st Congressional District of Florida matters to us here in Alabama, I remember being in, it might have been near the rotunda, actually, Congress, because Democrats took over in 06, and the summer is either 07 or 08. It was 08. And Nancy Pelosi shut down the House early while Republicans were trying to give their, like, 10-minute speeches or whatever. And the Republican members refused to move, refused to leave, and continued to give their speeches, even though the power was out, the lights were off, the C-SPAN cameras had stopped. They continued talking and continued operating in the House as if it were still in session. And I recall talking to Jeff Miller, so it had to be 08. Inside the Capitol when all this was going on, and we had like a lengthy discussion about the tanker contract and why Boeing was bad for defense. And keep in mind, that 1st Congressional District of Florida, all the Pensacola Naval assets and Eglin Air Force Base, those two big ones. We had like a long discussion about defense contracts and keeping them honest and Mobile and what they were doing, and what the state of Alabama was doing. And this is a guy who represents a big chunk of Florida. So it matters. It matters what goes on over there in that relationship. And it sounds like with Jerry Carr, at least, there's no relationship whatsoever. Maybe for good reason. And with Barry Moore, it's kind of mixed. It sounded like neither one of them were really big in what Congressman Gaetz did to Kevin McCarthy with the motion to vacate. But it is relevant. Whatever you think about Gaetz, there is a relevancy there that you have to take into consideration. So maybe Albrecht was asking the question for a different reason or whatever it may be. But also, and then I said this yesterday, he is a news broadcaster for not just Mobile. He is the CBS, is kind of like the face of the CBS affiliate for the Mobile Pensacola market. Now, we can talk about why are Pensacola and Mobile in the same market? Would it make more sense to put like Pensacola with like a, Fort Walton Beach, Destin, Panama City? Panama City Beach, or Panama City, I should say, is its own TV market. And it's like one of the smallest in the country, that and Dothan. And even some of those towns along I-10 in the Florida Panhandle are in the Dothan TV market. Bonifay, Chipley. But why do we do our TV markets the way we do? And I'm convinced of this, and I've talked to people about this. Why are Mobile and Pensacola together? Because the people who have this market right now want to be in the top 100. You get in the top 100, you charge a higher rate for advertising, for national advertising. Even though you have one station that does like almost strictly Florida Panhandle with the ABC affiliate. And the others try to kind of do both, but don't really do Florida very well. But yet we call it Mobile Pensacola, and by asking about Matt Gaetz in a Mobile Pensacola market, it's absolutely fair game, I think. Also, if Peter Albrecht were moderating a 1st Congressional District of Florida debate, one would anticipate he may ask a question about Barry Moore or Jerry Carl. Fire Dog goes on to write, public school should be considered a form of child abuse. Well, that's pretty harsh. They will withhold anything they can from parents. They will teach the lowest common denominator and force your kid to sit there with the slow learners. Half the kids don't even speak English these days. I mean, there is sort of a being a product of what your surroundings may be. But like I went to public school. I'm a graduate of Pelham High School in Shelby County, Alabama Public Schools. And my experience there compared to, and I know it's not like this in most other places, but I felt it's pretty average. Well, like, I got into the AP classes, already advanced classes. So like, most places in this state, I would think, where the population is, there are opportunities to go do, to be around more challenging situations academically. It's not as if you're just in the class with all the dumb kids. Like, if you really are a good parent and you want your kids to strive and you're really going to push them, there is a path for you, no matter where you are in this state. The lowest common denominator, even in, like, the saddest part of Pritchard, I would think. But maybe not everyone can achieve that kind of academic prowess or whatever, and it's just more to overcome. I understand. But where I get a little sideways with the school choicers, fire dog, if you live in a place and you're paying higher taxes because your municipality voted to increase your own taxes to improve your own schools, and then you're told, well, now you have to start admitting, because the only way school choice works is if it really is a market, and you have underperforming schools where students are at underperforming schools and they can pick a school system they want to be a part of. And maybe it's not so much of a problem here in the south part of the state. But Paul DeMarco and I talk about this. In Birmingham, Mount Brook and Birmingham are right next to each other. And the city of Mount Brook does not want their system to be overwhelmed with Birmingham school kids. And then on the other hand, how many kids from Mountain Brook are going to go leave the Mountain Brook system to go to the, I don't know, Vestavia, Homewood, Jefferson County or Shelby County schools? Probably not very many. But there'd probably be the other way around. And so you build this school system up, you build the brick and mortar and all the capital improvements to have nice things. You pay outrageous taxes, because those people do, and then you're told, and you're getting, this is like Phil Williams, Dale Jackson, I got an argument about this. Then the state tells you, mandates you to get off your high horse, you elitist in your school system, you're going to start allowing kids from other school districts to come in and be in your school system and dilute the quality of education that you are paying taxes for. Is offensive to me. That is socialism. That is like a train to the equity station. And like I said, I don't know if it's necessarily applicable here. I mean, Mobile County, Mobile is so far, handled the race situation so much better than Birmingham. That's why there's like 22 municipalities or jurisdictions in Jefferson County and only a handful in Mobile County. Because you didn't have the white flight. You didn't have everybody going off and forming their own little city. And, you know, like, they kept it together in Mobile. However, if you move to one of these communities, and this all happened back, you know, long before a lot of us were around, if you move to one of those communities and you live there, and then all of a sudden you're told by the state of Alabama that you have to start participating in this school choice system we arranged, they got ways of making it worth your while, if you know what I mean. It's just not right. How do you ensure that that's not going to be something? Anyway. Okay, read, not breed. 251-343-0106. Keep it right there. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Flores Show on FM Talk 106.5. Learn that happiness on her ain't just for high achievers.
My heroes have always been cowboys, and they still are, it seems. Sadly in search of one step and back on themselves, and they're slow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Flores Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Daniel and Foley, I slept so good last night. Dead murderers make me happy. We should sell tickets to executions and popcorn. Wonder what kind of who would buy into that? Unnamed Texter, Boeing has never resolved the 7 category deficiencies with the KC-46. Yeah. It's like, how did that one work out? Like, Boeing is not a good actor here, but they're very powerful. And you go back and you look back at the Airbus Boeing conflict, if you will, and it'll always be this. Airbus never had the, they never had the sway they needed to compete on that level. And I say this too, guys. Richard Shelby, a little underwhelming there in that one, looking back. Did not use his significant influence to make that happen with Airbus and that tanker contract. Not like a Trent Lott would have or something of a similar stature. These lions of the Senate. So I think that's where, you know, maybe they had the superior product, maybe they had the cheaper product. But it was real nasty, real ugly. And now here we are. Ricky. Texas, you could count on Alabama. Ivy tells Greg Abbott and Biden razor wire border dispute. And he sends me that a screenshot from his, I don't know. You happy about that, Ricky? And then he sends me a blank text. I guess it was succumbed to the evil demons in Ricky's head. Anyway, enough of that. 251-343-0106. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. I mean, we're in a real, like, I guess I don't want to say scary, but a troubling sort of situation where you know, and we've seen this before in American history, where the National Guard and the state, the governor is at odds with the administration. And, you know, the federal government typically prevailed except for once, and that didn't end well. But, like, even with, you know, George Wallace and his various stands against the federal government, he always lost. They made George Wallace a martyr. And you made George Wallace, like, capitalized on everything that came at him. He would use it to capitalize, be it either this, like, half-crazed racist segregationist that people would cheer on, are this like victim, this martyr, this poor little Southern governor being picked on by the big old mean old federal government, you know? And agree or disagree with that premise, it worked and it made him a very popular national figure. What's Texas doing here? I don't know. But historically, the federal government, when you talk about just head-to-head matchups with states, they lose. Unnamed Texter. Oh, the same guy. Airbus won the contract. Boeing and Congress interfered, much like Space Force at Redstone. Now, that's the way it was. When I saw the day after January the 6th, or 2 days, and Space Command was coming to Huntsville, I was like, oh, we've seen this play before. We know how this story is going to end. Unnamed texture, how will school choice affect school systems that are under federal zoning court orders? I don't know. I don't know. That's a great question. But I'm not an anti-school choice or teacher union guy. I am just a school choice skeptic. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. I've thrown away the blue. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Friday morning. Just a real quick editorial note here. I'm not anti-school choice. I'm very skeptical of it. I have my questions. And especially, like, and maybe it's self-serving, but I don't like the idea of a school system. And for it to work, it's probably going to have to be this way, being told that you're going to have to start taking kids from other school systems. That's a possibility here. So I'm not anti-school choice, but it's Dale Jackson and Phil Williams and I got an argument on Phil's show Wednesday, and he was saying, like, look, the guys in Mountain Brook and the guys in Madison that don't want to accept kids from Huntsville or Birmingham, respectively, need to get over it and quit being elitist. And I kind of took exception to that because those school systems pay a lot in taxes to have good schools. And what if they don't want those kids from other school systems? Well, being told by the state of Alabama that they have to take them, it just really just reeks of government overreach. But enough of that. Still to come, Chris Elliott, state senator from my neck of the woods, south half of Baldwin County. He'll be with us. Also, our show's returning champion. Joining us now on the line, and maybe we can talk a little about school choice with her, April Marie Fogle of Alabama Today. April Marie, good morning. How are you? Uh-oh, do we have you, April Marie?
I got you. Sorry.
School. We were talking about. Now, can you hear me?
I can.
Live radio, ladies and gentlemen. did I wake you up or something?
You know, you did not. But I'm sitting over here. I had to mute myself because I was going liar when you said you're not against school choice. You're not necessarily, maybe not against, but you ain't leaning towards.
Well, I'm not against. It's like it's this idealism of it. Like, hey, my tax dollars should go where I want it to go. Okay, fine. We have a little discussion about that. But there's also the school of thought that where I get really sideways, and Paul DeMarco and I have talked about this. I mean, maybe it's where he lives in Homewood. Doesn't like the idea, I guess, of kids from Birmingham coming over the mountain and being in their schools and diluting the quality of their schools, while the people who have that system in place in Birmingham, they just kind of languishes in this terrible, awful system. Like, where's the personal responsibility component? I'm not one of these guys that, like, because the teachers union and the AA and all those guys are so phony on this issue. They claim to be against it for the reasons that just aren't true. It's teacher accountability and lousy teachers, and those lousy teachers need to be held accountable. I'm all about that. And if school choice is a way to do that, then let's talk about it. But what I don't like is, hey, what if you like your school? Do you get to keep your school?
Well, but see, to the best of my knowledge, unless something has changed, the schools have to say, we have spots and are willing to take people. And the reason for that is the reason you're saying, which is people pay higher taxes. People move into a specific area, for these schools to be closed. Mountain Brook schools, an interesting thing that's been happening with Mountain Brook schools for years are people who teach in Mountain Brook schools, but their kids are zoned for other schools. Those parents have been trying to get their kids in the schools they teach in for years. And I think if they do open up spots, they end up taking their employees' kids before they take random kids. And even that's been bought.
Well, I mean, just say this, and this was the Dale and Phil and I, and then they got on to our mutual friend Paul DeMarco about this. Like, these school systems need to get over themselves and quit being elitist snobs and allow the free market to do its magic.
It's not about being elitist. It's not a lot about being elitist snobs. It's about getting what you pay for. And if you move into one, there's a reason I live, you know, a stone's throw away from Mountain Brook. I literally can walk to the end of my street and see Mountain Brook seven houses down. But I don't live there because I can't afford to live in Mountain Brook. And my kids can't go to their school because that's the way life works. And it's not unfair. It's just the way it is. It's life. And so I think that I absolutely wholeheartedly agree. We should not force these schools to take illiterate children who are 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 years behind. We shouldn't force them to. That's not right or fair. It's not their fault that Birmingham schools suck. And quite frankly, it's not that that the kids who are in the failing schools and aren't up to standards, they're not worse than the kids who have the great schools aren't better than the other kids. But life is their parents moved them to a place for a specific reason, have families, or, you know, started a family in that area, and we shouldn't force them to take kids.
And you want me to get on board with school choice, like, 100%. These two things, that first component that we're discussing about the autonomy of the school system to make its own choices based on this whole school choice framework, I don't know that it works unless you kind of force everybody to play, but let's put that aside. If you could take care of that and you could say, hey, if you're in a system or in a feeder system and you pay a higher tax rate so that your school can, you know, have this and the other schools don't pay that higher tax and they don't have it, you can ensure that we're not going to be forced to accept students from other schools because the state of Alabama deems so. Okay, that's one thing. The other problem I would have, look, my child's three. I have years and years to contemplate this. But the other problem, when you have these, when you have the federal, I mean, the state government start putting money into a private school system, and all of a sudden you got $6,000 or $4,000 or whatever it winds up being in your pocket to put toward a private school tuition, what does that do to the private school market? Does it force private schools to raise their tuition? And if you're kind of happy with your private school, now you got to pay a higher tuition and you're in a more crowded school. I mean, it's the same problem with Obamacare and what the impact of these government subsidies had on the private insurance market. It did cause costs to go up for a lot of other people who were already in that marketplace. So, I mean, if there's a way to assure that something like that can be protected against as well, then okay.
I can speak for myself here when I say my children go to private school. My children have, all three of them do, all three of them have since 4K. It sucks. The tuition is awful, and it's kind of insane to think about. But here's the deal. I want every child to have the same opportunity my children has. It is absolutely wrong, absolutely horribly wrong, that people who live in the same neighborhood as me, who cannot send their kids to private school and are stuck in a completely failing system.
But April Marie,
so we need to design, hold on. We need to design our education system around that kid having the ability, their parents having the ability to say, I do not want to send my kid to a school where they aren't going to learn to read, aren't going to learn to write, are going to be absolutely indoctrinated with racial and gender nonsense. I want the ability to send them somewhere else, but I can't afford to. I pay my taxes, but that tax money goes to the crappy school and my kid is stuck there. That's not right.
Well, here's what I would say to that, though. Your situation, I don't know your financial situation and how you're able to make it work, but somehow you do. And somehow you sacrifice and you do without and you don't go on extravagant vacations or whatever it is so that your child or your children, I should say, are able to go to these schools. Meanwhile, I mean, who's to say that person down the street isn't making those same sacrifices? Maybe they're living a different lifestyle and they're okay with the public school. And you're saying that, well, they should have that same, that they should have the same the opportunity to send their children to school or whatever. I mean, you see where we're going here with this. We're talking equality and this equity stuff. It becomes very socialist.
Well, I think that the issue is, who does the money belong to? The money that you pay into your, you know, pay into taxes that are specified for education. Is that money specifically, should it in your brain, should that money be allocated for your son's education or for the building full of administrators and teachers who are going to fail your son? Who does that money belong to? At the end of the day, if you can tell me it belongs to the crappy school with the crappy teachers and the terrible administrators, then end of discussion. But the fact is, no one in their right mind thinks that's the money is you get pay that in taxes for the crappy school. You
here's
pay
what
that
it, taxes here's what
for
it
your
is.
Son's education.
Here's what it is. Here's what that money is. It's not my money, your money. It's everybody's. Okay.
No. It's your son's money. You pay into the system.
I pay into the
expectation
system.
Your child. Yes, but with the expectation that when it's your child's turn to go to school, your needs, his needs, society's needs will be met. He will learn to read, to write, to do math.
What if I don't have kids? What if I'm having to pay these taxes? I don't have kids. I have no intention to having kids. And I still got to pay these taxes.
Because what you're paying for is the societal good. It's like paying for the police and the fire, even if you never get robbed or have a fire. You're paying for the societal good that the neighbor's kids will learn to read, write, learn basics of U.S. history, and be good members of society.
But that is true even when you are old and gray and you're still paying into the system and your kids have gone on.
And that's what you're paying into. But you're paying for, you look at the child, the money is intended to teach your neighbor's children or your neighbor, you know, whatever community, to teach that child to read and write. It's not for an abstract set of buildings and an abstract set of administrators.
But we decided as a society a long time ago, you're right on this, that we would have some presence of public education, because you can't have a functioning economy and you can't have a functioning society without educated citizens who can read, write, add, subtract, whatever. You got to have that, right? We agree on that. That's what,
yes.
But it stops there. It doesn't apply to your child. And here's what I would say. Hear me out now. If you are a parent who puts your kid in a private school, then maybe you should get something back, because you're taking the burden of the public school would have to handle onto yourself. And
well, that's what an ESA is. An ESA says the money follows the kid. If you choose to send your kid to a private school, if you choose to homeschool, if you choose to whatever, and it's not even all, a portion of the money allocated for your child's education follows them. The money follows the child, does not go into this black hole that has turned into these failing school districts. And that's why the school districts that are successful, those districts should have the opportunity to say, nope, everything here is working just fine. We don't have the resources to take in any more students.
Well, then it should come in the form of some kind of tax credit or something like that, and not be this behemoth system. Because it's like, here's my problem with it. Like, don't look at it as my tax dollars. Look at it as me doing something, because we all have to pay into the system. It's like, we may not use this road, but we all got to pay for it. That's just because you need that for society to function. So anyway, put that aside. You should get something back for taking that burden away from your public school system. I think that's where school choice is, but maybe it needs to be in a form of a tax credit or something, and not this institutionalized idea of school choice.
But see, that's what it essentially, it is a tax credit by a different name. What this is, okay, your child would annually get, you know, X amount of dollars, $6,000 or $7,000, right? And instead of that money going to Smith's terrible, awful school where no one's learning to read and write, instead of going to that, the money goes to the school the parents choose for their child to actually get an education that works for them. This isn't parents who against school systems. This is parents and the school system for the children who need to learn.
But I would also say this, and there's got to be consequences for people who vote in crappy politicians and crappy policymakers in your area. And that's the problem with Birmingham. The same losers for the last 30 years have ran that city into the ground, and they vote for them over and over again. And I know it's not everybody's fault, but there has to be, like, you got to be accountable for that somehow. And if you're not going to be accountable and vote in new people, well, I mean, it's like you're doing the same thing over and over again, and you're getting the same kind of crappy result.
Yeah, but the idea that, the idea that children should be stuck in a school because the bad people keep getting voted in hasn't gotten us a new system in decades, if not hundreds of years.
But you can't separate the parent and the child.
The kids first.
You can't separate the parent and the child.
Politics from the child.
Yeah, but you can't.
The society's job is to teach.
When I go
reading, writing, math.
When I go vote, I have to vote. My child has the ability to vote, yes, but I am responsible for my child, and I need to vote for his interest or her interest, and people in Birmingham are not doing that.
No, I don't think we blame the people in Birmingham for the Birmingham school systems being the way they are.
I think you absolutely do.
Again, it's not about the people. It's about the students.
Yes, but the reason the students have a crappy school system is because their parents keep voting in crappy politicians who can't mind the store the way it's supposed to be. But am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong.
You are wrong.
Okay, so who's responsible for the Birmingham the disarray in Birmingham government? Who does that fall upon?
I think it falls on a system that is broken and cannot be fixed in a single election.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. Move then. You know that's kind of like the way this works.
It's easy to say move. There are families that have been here for generation after generation after generation. Their kids deserve as much of a good education as the kids in Mountain Brook.
The kids' parents got to take some responsibility here, though, and part of that is being engaged in the civic process. I'm just saying. Anyway, everybody, as much as I'm enjoying this, we're out of time. We will pick this up again at a later date. Thanks for making time for us.
We will.
All right.
Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye. April Marie Fogle, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I don't know what's wrong with me, because I know I need my rest. But if I don't stay up all night and sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Hey, yes, we are beer takers. Yes, we are hellraisers. Get out of our way wherever we go.
Coming to you live like I do every night from the heart of Uranio. I play a little sad and I play a lot of glad and a few old cheap songs.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Stay here, Chris Elliott coming up in the next hour. In the meantime, I guess we'll see where at least the texting public is on the school choice here. We're going to get through some of these texts. Sean writes, he's got a lot to say here. The Texas thing is political showmanship. Nothing will happen. Abbott is a sellout. Carl Rove, neocon. Okay. It is a little refreshing to push back at some of this. The private schools will become like the universities. You're paying for public daycare for other people's kids. Pro tip, if your kid is good enough at football, the good high school will pay for to send your kid there. Okay, fair enough. How will school choice affect school systems we already went on that one. Tuskers, do folks with no kids get a tax break on public schools? I'd rather taxes go to trade schools. This is it. When you say that your tax dollars should follow your kid to your choice of schools, and then the person who doesn't have kids says, well, I want my tax dollars to follow me and it go to my pocket because I don't have kids. And that's totally misses the point of the institution of the public schools, because the public schools aren't for just people with kids. They're for everybody. We decided public education is going to be one of these necessary functions of government. I don't know why, but we did. Well, I know why, but and I could, you know, there's a rational, justifiable reason for that. It is because we need education to make society function. Okay? But when you start talking in these terms of my tax dollars should follow my kids to the school of my choice, they're not your kids' tax dollars. They're everybody's. And we have to come to, like, you know, for better or for worse, we have to come together as a society and elect leaders who do the right things with those tax dollars. And if those tax dollars can be used in some way to reward parents who take the public education burden off the government and take it on themselves, then so be it. But we got to stop thinking in this idealistic way, I think, because public schools are exactly what that says. They're the public schools. They're everybody's schools. And, well, anyway, more on that in a moment. But if you have bad schools, isn't that kind of on you for voting for the same bad people all the time? We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
No. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5, hour number 3 now underway. Thank you very much for joining us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to harass me? Call me a loser. Talk about why April Marie is the far superior intellectual half of talking about in these idealistic terms that your is a possessive pronoun. Your tax dollars should follow you. What about my tax dollars if I don't have children? Do I get a rebate? And that is, we know why you don't. We decided we would have public schooling. So you got to stop thinking of the tax dollars in those ways. And instead, you got to think about everybody has to pay into the system. And if you are going to create something that is going to ease the burden on the system, say by sending your child to private school, then you are homeschooling your children or whatever it may be, then yes, then maybe you should get something back. Doesn't that seem fair? But telling a school system or telling a private school, well, no, it's telling a school system one that they have to accept children from another system makes me very nervous. And in addition to that, if you do send your children to private school, and this is what really makes me nervous about the school choice discussion, because there may be like a certain like means, like if you make above a certain income, a household income, then you're not eligible. You don't get the subsidy or you don't get the voucher or savings account. Well, is that right? Well, we were going to send our kids to private school, or we haven't sent our kids to private school anyway. And we make a certain amount, but now our school tuition is going to go up because all these new customers on the market suddenly need a place to go to school, and the private school wants to do that, but they're going to charge a little bit more because they can. So, like, when the government gets involved in the marketplace, it becomes Obamacare-esque. Michael, I'm not anti. I just don't like it based on my Pollyanna view of public schools. Yet haven't had any experience with public schools in decades. Is that about right? I don't know, Michael. unnamed texter. So that means if you're born in a poor county or city, you go to a poor school. And that is not fair when it comes to public education. It should be the same quality throughout the state. But we have school systems throughout the state. It's not everything you want. You think that everybody should get quality, equal quality. But it doesn't work that way because people pay different levels of taxes. You grow up in a poor county, you're not paying as much in taxes. So you don't get to have the nice things. It's just how it is about everything. Roads, bridges, infrastructure, police and fire protection. Services. If you grow up, if you decide to live in a poor county, that is what you get. We have a capitalist economy. It's just, and it applies to government services. So not all governments are equal. And when you try to apply equality or equity in this case for all governments across the board, you really, really do mess it up. So yeah, it ideally would be the same quality throughout the state. They should strive for that. But there's always going to be places that are going to outdo the minimum standard. And if you're, say, school A, and school A is a poor county, but it somehow makes things work, and it gets you a decent, acceptable, but in the eyes of the state of Alabama, in the eyes of the federal government, it passes the test, the smell test, it passes with in their eyes, and it's acceptable, and it continues to exist. And that's the way it is. And then the school system B over here is like, no, we're going to work harder. We're going to strive to do better. We're going to raise the bar in our system. We're going to do better than the required minimum. You're telling me because the people there decided collectively that they were going to do that, that they should be penalized. They should, because we have to have equality. That's very anti-American in my mind. Like this is always the example I use. I know I use it all the time. In Covington County, Alabama, there are no private schools. That's a big county. There are three public school systems: Andalusia, OP, and Covington County schools. No private schools. And City of Andalusia said, we're going to have a good school system. And when we need something, we're going to figure out, we're going to do bake sales, we're going to raise money, we're going to do fundraisers. And if we want a recital hall, or if we want a new band instrument, or we want to build a new stadium, we as a community are going to figure out how to do that. Or we need a new AP teacher. We are going to figure out how to make that possible. And so that's what they do. They figure out a way to do it, a way to make it happen. But you're telling me the school system over here, I don't know, say it's Evergreen or wherever, Conecuh County, and they should have, but they're not willing to do that. They're just busy with other things or whatever. That they should have the same, there should be equality there between the two systems? Is that right? So no, you can't have that because it's a suggestion that the people who overachieve are somehow going to be penalized in the name of equality. Fire Dog writes, personal responsibility has been dead. In this country for at least 30 years. Yeah, but if you're like really a conservative, you want personal responsibility to like really be ahead of the pecking order over like this sort of gimmick ideal thing, I think, with school choice. Like, I'm not against school choice, but I have some questions. I'm just very skeptical of it, and not necessarily that it produces better outcomes, but the unintended consequences of changing the status quo in the system that we all have to live under and have sacrificed to live under. Ricky says, please hang all communists today. I don't think so. Named Textual, this child has been enrolled in school at some time in Mobile County. The Mobile County School Board will not verify that a parent is actually homeschooling his child if he claims he is. The idea that the money goes with the child is an invitation for deadbeats to not bother to send their kids to send their children to school and get extra cash for doing so. April Murray is wrong. You are not wrong. Yeah, and we got to have some kind of meat. I would say the way around that to fix that, to keep deadbeats from just collecting money while their kids sit home and watch TV all day, you got to have some kind of basis of standards and testing. But if you really are like on board with homeschooling and you do it, you quit your job and you sacrifice because you're going to teach your kids the way you want to teach them, then you should get something back because you're no longer a burden on the public system. And if you're doing it the right way, but we got to know that you're doing it the right way. So there's got to be some kind of testing or something there. Because and this is where the deal breaker for a lot of school choicers is, we don't want the public testing component. We don't want that. We don't want the government influencing in any way, so we want to be left alone. Backstrap, you can always tell who has a kid, school-age kid, and who doesn't. I wonder if you'll change your tune when your kid goes to public school and ask you what a BJ is when they're six. Well, Backstrap, I mean, that's kind of the real world, right? I went to public school. Am I supposed to be horrified that my child's going to ask me what a BJ is? I mean, I'm totally anticipating the real world is the real world. No, I'm not going to change my tune. Like I said, when my kid's in public schools, if we send him to public school, we'll deal with it. It's just one of those things you got to deal with as a parent. You have to shield him from some of that. Well, let's not kid ourselves. Did you go to public school, Backstrap? When did you make this discovery? Did you learn it the quote-unquote right way? Or did you do where were you like kidding around with your bros back behind the assembly hall or whatever? My name Texter, this will lead to lawsuits. How do you take a rural kid to a good school? A lot easier to do in a bigger city. Plus, can he cross city to county lines? Because someone from Murphy decided they wanted to go to Daphne. And that's the big question is, and this was the argument I got in, because I think for school choice to work, for the market to work, you got to be able to allow for that. But then you got to tell these schools, you'd have to tell Daphne schools that they have to allow the kid from Murphy into their school. And the people in Daphne are like, whoa, 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 whoa. We don't want all these kids from Murphy in our schools. You've got to take them because we want school choice to function and operate. And, you know, the market is going, the laws of markets are going to prevail here, and it's going to make all the schools do better. Well, what about it's going to dilute the quality of the schools that we're paying for in Daphne? Well, so what? It's going to make the school, it's going to make Murphy better because they're going to strive to do better because they want to keep that student. Does that just seem like a lot of wish casting? Maximus, Jeff, do you think anything will gain concerning crime reduction if executions were televised? I don't know, but they'd get big ratings. Maybe. Brandon, school choice won't necessarily water down private schools. Most of them are full now and don't have the physical room / land to expand. But I'm not talking about necessarily just private schools. What about the public schools? Guys, homeschool is testing. Come on now. Well, Pat, I'm sure it does. If you're going to go on this, please educate yourself. But no, Pat, you're the one that needs to educate yourself. Sit down. Listen to me. the school choice, the mechanism here to make you eligible for school choice, what a lot of people want to do to make it into law is they want some kind of testing to show that you're doing this. Now, look, that it would be a part of the school choice program. However, homeschool parents and some private school parents don't want that government testing. They don't want that, like, standardized test to see if your child's learning as a measure of accountability. They don't want that. That's a deal breaker for them. So we're not talking about whatever testing is in place right now for homeschools kids. We're talking about, in addition to that, to be eligible for school choice dollars, they want some testing. And that's a big matter of contention in this discussion. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5, 24 minutes after the hour. Programming note coming up on Monday's show. Shane Stringer will be with us, state rep from Citronelle. And our buddy Dale Jackson, WVNN Yellowhammer News, and one guest to be named later. So that's coming up on Monday's program. Irish Indian, Jeff, you better stick to debating Parker because April Marie is spot on. Irish Indian, if you're going to count on April Marie to win the school choice debate for you, well, then school choice is probably going to be dead real soon. I hate to tell you that. That seems, like I said, April Marie Fogle's arguments. It's just like we should have equality of schools because. Well, why? Because it's the right thing to do. Why is it the right thing to do? Because it's not the children's fault. Well, yeah, but it's the parents' fault. Like, you know, I'm raising my child, and my kid goes out and he robs a store. I'm accountable for that, you know, you kind of own your child until a certain age, the behavior of your children. And you also own the responsibility of voting in their interest. You're not just voting for yourself anymore. So you people in Birmingham or you people wherever there's bad schools in our democratic republic, you get the government you deserve, and that government is the reason why your institutions are what they are. Jason, she's taking irresponsible parents out of the equation when that's a huge part of the problem. A little bleeding heart coming from AMF. Yeah, I agree with that. Is it just every time I get into like really heated discussions with the pro school choicers, they sound like very emotionally charged lefty socialist types. Ricky, you are a sellout, Jeff. SALE. Sellout. Like what they have at Walmart when generators are on sale. The Mariner, Jeff, do you pay attention at all? Public school officials and teachers use their advocate to remove testing standards now, as it expressly showing their failures. I don't care about that. It's not pertinent to our discussion. Jeff, you're severely uneducated on the issue of school choice and private schools, especially in the Mobile area. But no, it's big picture. Like Mariner, here's the thing. When they pass a school choice bill in Montgomery, it's not going to be just for you guys in Mobile. It's not just going to be for us over here in Baldwin County. It's going to be for everybody. One size fits all. From Jackson County to Lauderdale County to Mobile County to Houston County and all points in between. From the shores of Orange Beach to the desolate Bucks Pocket in Marshall County, it's everything. And you can tell me this like one-size-fits-all approach is going to work. I got questions. So, you know, like, I want to get into the details and talk about the consequences of a school choice bill. And if you like your school, do you get to keep your school? That sounds very Obamacare-esque, doesn't it? And they texted Jeff. I went to Pelham High School as well. I think we succeeded in spite of it. I didn't think Pelham was that bad. It wasn't great either. Certainly wasn't the Hoover school system. But, I mean, they're a lot worse. Now, unnamed texter, there's Pelham has its own school system. They broke away from Shelby County. Every time I go back to Pelham, it just feels like it's stuck in quicksand, like it's not really moving. Terry, she sounds like a socialist. There have always been haves and have-nots. People need to make up the difference in education opportunities. People shouldn't have a bunch of kids that cannot properly raise. They cannot properly raise, period. And why do the same people always dominate the text line? Because they text all the time, Terry. You just brought up that testing would be required. Yeah, under a you would just brought up testing would be required to make school choice work, and then say testing isn't pertinent when it's brought up that public schools want to get rid of testing currently. I don't, but public schools are a different discussion. You're taking public schools, which are quote unquote public, to get public money, and when you're taking private schools and them getting public money, the standards are going to be different. It has to be. 251-343-0106. But that's what I'm trying to point. I'm trying to make. It's the world's not fair. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. That means to me that I get.